A family of dignified reputation. My brother remained weak with fever for several more weeks, catching a second illness before he finally began to recover. He had now been absent from the clavier for nearly 2 months. I had not written any music during this time either, as I would not have been able to explain the quill and ink sitting beside the clavier stand. Instead, I spent the months practicing, while the unwritten notes ached in my mind, hungering for paper to rest on. Momentum, once slowed, was difficult to pick up again. Our invitations dwindled. I still played alone before my smaller audiences. I still relished knowing that the applause was for me. But newspaper headlines were not the same as gifts of coin. My performances did not draw the kind of patrons we needed, their pockets lined with gold. Papa began to speak more and more about money, sometimes about nothing else. Even I had already learned that 350 gulden a year as the Vice-Kapellmeister of Salzburg's court was no large sum. We could earn more with one night's worth of performances. "A pittance," Papa complained, "for such a position. There is no respect for the creation of music anymore, and certainly not by the Archbishop." "We could dismiss Sebastian for a time," my mother suggested, in a quiet voice, so that Sebastian would not hear it from where he was tidying their bedchamber. Papa made an irritated sound.
"The Mozarts and their famed children, unable to keep a manservant? Imagine inviting a member of the court to our home only to have my own wife serving him tea and cake. Who will send us invitations then?"
He waved a hand in the air.
No, I will arrange for their portraits to be done."
"A portrait each?" My mother's eyes flickered, and I could see her doing the calculation of the cost in her mind. "Leopold,
what's the matter? Are we not a family of dignified reputation? Do our children not deserve the best? Let our guests see how fine and young they both are, how well we are doing. Do you want to be the laughingstock of Salzburg, Anna?"
My mother pressed her hands tidily into her lap, in the way she always did when she knew she could not bend my father's ear. I thought of her asking me what good it would do for her to speak harshly. "Of course not," she said, in an even tone. My father went on, talking of taking us to France, to Paris. He had already begun soliciting, asking for the names of the Kapellmeisters in each French town we could pass, and whether or not the townspeople cared for musical performances.
"They will not stay young forever," Papa finished. "The older they are, the less magnificent their skills will seem."
Then he turned away, mumbling in the direction of Wolfrol's closed bedchamber door. He stepped inside, then shut the door behind him. In the silence, my mother looked at me and noticed my expression. She sighed. "You must forgive him his anxiety in times like this," she told me. "He is only looking out for our well-being. He says such things because he is desperately proud of you and your brother, and wants to ensure you are spoken of in high regard." "Are these times really so bad?" I said. "Why is Papa so worried?" Mama gave me a stern look.
"These are not questions a young lady should ask. Concentrate on what your father expects of you and nothing more."
I followed my mother's example and did not speak again. No question was ever one a young lady should ask. It was useless to bring up my performances, that I had been tiding us over all this time. Papa was still waiting to hear my brother again, and I could feel it, my father's mind pulling away from the memory of my talent. I was retreating into the dark spaces of his attention. I thought of Hyacinth. My fingers ached, longing for the chance to write again. He had been gone so long. I needed him to return before he forgot me too. Slowly, To my relief, Wulfril began to emerge from his bed. He started to chatter once more. I would find him in the music room in the mornings, seated on the clavier. A pink flush came back to his white cheeks. I took comfort in seeing him return to us, in all the familiar scenes that had been absent for the past month. Perhaps my worries about Hyacinth's involvement were just nonsense after all. And then, one morning, the quill and ink were out again, and he was scribbling away. My heart leapt. It meant that I could start writing again, too. Papa spent longer hours at the clavier with Wulfril and with me, as if to make up for the time we'd lost. He made Wulfril play so late into the night that my brother could not concentrate anymore, then slapped Wulfril's hands when he saw my brother's eyes drooping at the clavier. I'd seen Papa's temper strain many times before, but Wulfril had suffered so long during his latest illness, and I'd been so truly unsettled that Hyacinth had done something to him, that now I felt the urge to defend him rise in me. "Maybe he should rest now, Papa," I said, as Wulfril wiped tears away, the dark circles prominent under his eyes. His small shoulders hung low like a wilted plant. "I'm sure he will play better in the morning." Papa did not look at me. He watched as Wulfril started once again to play through the beginning of a sonata. The music did not have its usual joy, and Wulfril's hands could not play with their usual crispness. After several measures, Papa stopped him.
"To bed, both of you," he said wearily.
Shadows hid his eyes from me, so I could not guess what they looked like.
"I've heard enough for today."
That night, Wulfril curled up tight beside me and fell into a deep, exhausted sleep. He had recovered, but his strength had not fully returned to him. It was strange, his quietness. I draped my arm around him, touched my lips to his forehead, and let him rest. I continued to write my music in secret. By now, I had accumulated a small stack of papers at the bottom of our bedroom's drawers, little sonatas and whimsical orchestra pieces, and had started to scatter them around in different spots so that they did not all sit together. I would write when Wulfril and I had a rare moment alone. One day, Wulfril, who sat near the clavier and watched me work, spoke up again, a welcome respite from his silence.
"You should show Papa your music," he whispered.
He rose from the windowsill and came to sit beside me on the clavier's bench, pressing his small, warm body to me. When I looked down, I saw that his feet still dangled some distance from the floor.
"Papa will not like it," I said. "I've told you this before."
"You don't know that," he replied.
He turned his eyes to the sheet of music before him, his face full of wonder.
"How can someone not like this?"
I sighed.
"Wulfril, it's very kind of you to like my music, but you are not Papa. What can he possibly use it for? He certainly would not let me publish them or perform them for an audience. He may tell me to stop writing altogether then. He will think it is a waste of my time when I should instead be practicing for our performances." "Why?"
I always disliked this question from him.
"I am a lady. It is simply not proper for me," I decided to say. "I would need to have your fame and your ability to draw a crowd to even risk such a thing."
Wulfril frowned. I had never spoken of our performances like this before, as if we did not play together, as if we were separate.
"But you have my fame," he said. "You draw your own crowds."
I looked down at him. He meant it in earnest. I could see that, but I knew it was not true. Still, I put my arm around him and squeezed his shoulder once, my silent thanks, before I turned back to the half-filled sheet before me.
"Let me finish," I said. "It is almost your turn at the clavier."
I saw Papa alone that evening. It was very late at night, and Mama had already retired to bed, and I had carried a sleeping Wulfril from the music room to our own bedroom. I had returned to the music room to fetch a candle. On my way back, I caught a glimpse of Papa sitting by himself at the dinner table and paused. Both of his elbows were propped up on the table, and his head sat in his hands. I watched him for a moment, my face partially hidden behind the edge of the wall. Papa had rolled his sleeves up to the middle of his arms, messily, and gotten a stain on one of them. Mama would have to wash his shirt in the morning. His powdered wig lay forgotten on a nearby chair. I saw his dark hair in mild disarray, combed through with his fingers, loose strands everywhere. He seemed not like the stern figure often standing beside the clavier, but a tired soul, vulnerable and small. In this light, I could see what he might have looked like as a young man, wide-eyed and smooth-faced, how my mother must have seen him before the weight of family and fortune carved lines into his skin. Perhaps he had been carefree in his youth, too. A teenage Wulfril. I could not picture my father playing childish pranks on his peers, though, or clapping his hands with laughter at a story. He must have always been serious, even when he was handsome and charming enough to have coaxed my mother into his arms. And something about the intensity of his presence, the gravity of him, made me feel bold. What if I did as Wulfril suggested and told him about my compositions? Would it cheer him? Surely he could feel some sense of pride, however fleeting, in knowing that his daughter could write music as competently as his son? I remembered Wulfril's words, and then my own. Perhaps he would let me perform them, just now and then. A small refrain in the middle of a private concert. Some opportunities before my performing years ended. An urge rose in me then to tell my father about my secret. To hear the approval in his voice. My pendant felt suddenly heavy in my pocket. I thought about what Hyacinth would say. Did he want me to do this? I took a deep breath, wondering how I could word it to Papa. I am composing my own music. It is mine, from my hand alone. I wrote it for myself, and I wanted to share it with you. Do you see me? Papa must have heard me take my breath. He lifted his head from his hands and looked around as if in a momentary daze, then settled on me. For a moment, his eyes softened, as if in guilt or sorrow. He looked like he wanted to say something to me. I waited, my heart pounding, my entire body tilted in anticipation toward him. Then my father's gaze retreated behind a wall. My courage wavered. I held back the words from the tip of my tongue. "Have you stood there long?" he said. I shook my head, quietly. He looked away from me and rubbed a hand across his face.
"For heaven's sake, child, go to bed. It is not polite to stand in doorways spying on others."
The moment passed as quickly as it came upon me. I could no longer remember what I wanted to say. What was I thinking? Seconds earlier, I had nearly spilled open my secrets to him. Now, it seemed absurd to mention such an idea to my father. He would have torn my music in half, tossed the ruined sheets into the fire. The thought made me pale. I murmured an apology, stepped away from him, then turned toward the bedroom. Silver light sliced the floor into lines. When I moved past the windows, I thought I could glimpse the twin moons of the Kingdom of Bach hovering in the sky, moving slowly and steadily closer to each other. Exhaustion suddenly weighed against my chest, and I wanted nothing more than to lie down and sleep. In the morning, I would forget this moment. So would he. Someone was waiting for me right behind my bedroom door. He was so quiet that I startled in the dark. It was Hyacinth. He had grown a little taller since the last time I saw him, and his face was more beautiful than ever. He had heard me calling for him through my music, however unconsciously I had done it. I stared at him, caught between fright and joy. Whatever expression he saw on my face, it made him shake his head in sympathy.
"You've performed well on your own," he said.
His fingers brushed against my cheek.
"Why are you sad, my Fräulein?"
His words were so quiet and gentle, his look so attentive, that I felt an urge to cry. I swallowed, waiting until my eyes dried, and then whispered,
"My father is unhappy."
I looked to where my brother lay curled in bed, withered from exhaustion and already asleep.
"Wulfril has been very ill lately. It has made him withdrawn and quiet."
Hyacinth's glowing eyes roamed around the room before they finally settled on the window that overlooked the Geitrudegas and the lands beyond.
"Perhaps I can do something to help your family," he said to me, taking my hand in his. "It is time for your next task. Are you ready?"
I thought of my father, with his head bowed in his hands, the dark circles under my brother's eyes. I thought of my mother wringing her hands. I looked down at his smooth, elegant fingers wrapped around mine, his presence here with me when others were not.
"Yes,"
I replied.